All right, moment of truth. Does anyone know what class we're doing on Sunday mornings? What we've been doing on Wednesdays? Does anyone not know I've been teaching for the last year on Wednesdays? All right, so here's the thing. I've been teaching on Wednesdays for the last year. We did Ezra and Nehemiah. We did James, 1st and 2nd Peter. We did a part of the book of Enoch for some reason. And then we did, we started this, the Life of David class, 8 classes ago. This is class 9, technically. Fortunately, we kind of got to a point to where Saul's dead now, so we can go to 2 Samuel and just pick up from there. But I do want to kind of give you a small recap for those that may not be caught up, which I would think would be the majority of folks haven't been with me. If you do want to catch up and you really want, you know, 4 hours extra of me talking, compilation videos of classes 1 through 8 are available on Facebook, on my page, and YouTube. And so if you really want to go through what we talked about so far, that's available to you. But we talked about why Saul was rejected as king. That's 1 Samuel 15 following. We talked about Samuel and him kind of parting ways. We talked about David and Goliath, the most kind of infamous or famous story about David that we kind of think about. We talked about how he became kind of like a special forces ranger kind of guy for Saul for a while and went hard against the Philistines. And then Saul got jealous and that avarice just kind of ate away at him. And then you have the kind of famous 2 rallies of Saul trying to kill David. David getting Goliath's sword from the priest, them all being killed besides one priest that made it out alive, him eating the showbread that was there that was being exchanged in the tabernacle, Saul kind of fleeing for his life in the caves, and then eventually going over to the Philistine camp, the nation, and kind of living there for a while, and then escaping with his life, and then Saul tries to kill him again, so he finally goes back and just kind of lives with the Philistines for a while and does raiding parties for the Philistines, so kind of working for the enemy. His own king rejected him. And then you have Saul getting desperate and a battle against the Philistines, going to a medium or a sorceress or a witch, whatever you want to say. Samuel comes back from the dead because he died and tells him, you're going to be here soon at this battle. And then Jonathan, all of Saul's sons, and eventually Saul kills himself, and the body is taken by the Philistines, and the Israelites go back and they get the body, they bring it back, and they have a proper burial. So that's where we are. So a pretty good amount of territory. That's 1 Samuel 15 to the very end of the book. That was last week. So that's 4 hours worth of class for you. If you really want to do extra credit, that's available to you. Okay, any questions? Everyone ramped up to be here so early in the morning for the first time in over a year. I'm glad you're here. I see faces. Like, it's been a year of me looking at nothing for a while, so appreciate you being here. Okay, let's begin in 2 Samuel chapter 1, most logical place. This is where David hears about Saul's death, as you'll read behind me. The version that I'm using for this class is the ESV. The English Standard Version first came out in 2001. This is the 2017 revision. There have been 3 updates since then, small typos and errors that they kind of fixed. So if you have a print copy of this, you can look in the front and the latest date that you have there, that's what version you have. There are 3 available right now, okay? I've used the New King James forever. And so for the last 2 years, I guess, I've been trying to kind of see what the ESV is all about. And from my study so far, it's been very helpful to kind of hear it in a different way. I'm so used to King James, New King James, when you read a verse and it doesn't sound familiar at all, but the content's still the same, it's interesting to kind of see how that messes with your brain a little bit. So, would someone like to read? Thomas, you want to read? Okay, let's do verses 1 through 11. Okay, I'll allow it.
Now,
All right, so this is a guy claiming to be the person that took Saul's life instead of being captured by the Philistines. Is this true? Story? The guy tells? Kind of iffy? No, I don't think so. Pretty clear. Did it happen this way? Not even close, right? If you remember the very end of Saul dying, who did he tell to kill him so he wouldn't be captured? His armor bearer, sword bearer, whatever. Right? His little guy that would follow him around. Did the armor bearer kill him? No, he was afraid. He was going to kill the king. Like, you know, he wasn't going to do that. So what did he do? He fell on his own sword, a very fancy medieval way to say he killed himself, right? So he wouldn't be captured and tortured and killed. And I get it. I mean, that's, you know, if you're a... thinking about the 80s and the Cold War, you had spies and tradecraft and all that. You had cyanide pills, right, that you would take so you wouldn't be captured and interrogated or tortured. And so this guy, being from the Amalekites, the people that were just struck down by David, for some context here, if you don't remember, this is a story, it's kind of complex a little bit, but remember you have David living with the Philistines during this time. He's working with them. He's friends with one of the main guys. And one of the main Philistine leaders says to David, hey, we're going to go fight the Israelites. Will you come with us? And he says, yes. So he actually gets his band of 600 men together, and they go to fight against Israel, which is just wild, right? Because this is King David in the future. They then form their party. And all the Philistines get together and they say, what's David doing here? He killed Goliath, remember? And they're like, yeah, well, he's fighting with us now. And they basically say, no, he's not. Get him out of here. Because he's not going to go down there and kill his own people. He's going to go there and be behind the formation and attack us from the rear. Good tactic, but still David was dismissed. And he went and fought the Amalekites instead while they are fighting the Philistines and the Israelites. This is where Saul dies. So he's coming back, David is, from the Amalekite ambush, and he's like, so how'd it go? Did Israel win or what? And like, no, Saul's dead. So this guy, why do you think he would come up with this story about having the crown and the armlet, and he was the guy that put Saul out of his misery? Why do you think he would tell this lie? So how it works is I have a question. It's not rhetorical. Okay, Mike. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, right? If you don't know the details here, what you've got is you've got King Saul trying to kill David at least two full campaigns now. David goes to the Philistines, of all people, to get away from Saul. So if you know that David and Saul have a problem together, and then you say you kill Saul and you kind of solve the future king's problem, you're pretty good guy, right? I mean, you're going to get some kind of reward, some kind of... might get a wife out of the deal. Who knows, right, Thomas? It fell out of a truck. I mean, I don't want to tell you. It just fell out of the back of the truck. So thus far, have we seen David happy that Saul would die in the future? It's a good moment for him. Remember, Samuel has already anointed him with oil to be the future king of Israel. So one would think that, you know, when the old king is out of the way and you get to be king, it's a good moment. That's not how David perceives it at all. He could have killed him at least twice, and he refused to do so. You know the little line that he kept saying? Like, forbid it to me to strike against the Lord's anointed. So he still saw King Saul as the Lord's anointed king. So, kind of a twist in the plot here, the guy that lies about killing Saul is not going to be rewarded for that. Let's keep reading. Verse 12. And they mourned, and they wept, and they fasted until evening for Saul, and for Jonathan his son, and for the people of the Lord, and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. So David hears Israel lost, which is not good for Israel, not good for the Lord's people. David, still kind of outcast, right? He's still with the Philistines in a way. Verse 13, David said to the young man who told him, "Where do you come from?" He said, "I'm a son of a sojourner, an Amalekite." And David said to him, "How is it you are not afraid to put out your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?" So now we kind of get an idea of what's coming, right? He's like, so what gives you the gumption to kill the anointed king of God's people? Kind of a weird way to say that, right? Then David called one of the young men and said, "Go and execute him." He struck him down so that he died. And that's pretty swift justice, right? It's kind of an idea of, you know, there's no trial, no due process here. It's just, you killed the king of Israel. All right. You know, you did it to yourself, in a way. David said, "Your blood be on your head, for your own mouth has testified against you, saying, 'I have killed the Lord's anointed.'" All right, thoughts? Do you have any? I'd like to hear them. No thoughts? Okay. All right, let's keep reading. Verse 17. So how tight were Jonathan and David? Yeah. They were best friends, right? Like, quick. And Jonathan stuck out his neck a couple of times to help David over helping his father, the king of Israel, right? So Jonathan dying here is definitely not a good thing. He was a good guy. And so him being a casualty of his father's war is a huge, huge issue. David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and Jonathan his son. He said it should be taught to the people of Judah. Behold, it is written in the book of Jashar. What is that? Yeah. That's the correct theological answer. Is it? We don't know. It's not preserved. We don't know what that book is. He said, "Your glory, O Israel, is slain on your high places." What's it? When it says high places, what does that refer to? Yeah, that's right. So you would go up high to get close to God, and you would offer sacrifices there. So like going up on a mountainside or a hill, if you will, to offer is kind of like a symbolic way of going up towards the heavens to be closer to God to give that sacrifice. How the mighty have fallen. That's a kind of a famous quote, right? Tell it not in Gath. Where's Gath? Okay, Philistia, right? Publish it not on the streets of Ashkelon. Where's that? So these are all major cities of the Philistine camp, right? Okay. Lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised exult or exalt. Your mountains on Gilboa, let there be no dew or rain upon you, no fields of offerings. For there the shield of the mighty was defiled, the shield of Saul not anointed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul returned not empty. Saul and Jonathan, beloved and lovely, In life and in death, they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. You daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you luxuriously in scarlet, who put ornaments of gold on your apparel. How the mighty have fallen in the midst of the battle. Jonathan lies slain on your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant have you been to me. Your love to me was extraordinary, surpassing the love of women. How the mighty have fallen, and the weapons of war perished. So what is that? What did I just read? Okay, it's lamenting Saul and Jonathan. But what kind of writing is that? Does it remind you of any other kind of book in the Bible? It's like a song, right? It's like a poem or poetry or a song. This is kind of the beginning, if you will, of getting a taste for how to understand the emotions of David, which is why this class, to me, is so huge, just because we've got a lot of information about the life and the actions of David, and then you've got this extra little book called the Book of Psalms, where most of them are from him, and it kind of dates where he's writing these songs, and you get an insight into what he's thinking. This is kind of unparalleled, right? We don't really have anybody else. We know what they did and how they felt at the same time. We don't really have that. You got one from Moses, and he's kind of complex. You get a little bit from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You got some inferences, like when he wept, for example. You know what emotion Christ is feeling when he loses Lazarus to death. And so you kind of have a bigger scope of how David is that high watermark for being someone after God's own heart. So, he's sad. And now we know exactly how he feels because he said, I wrote this poem, this song, and I put it in this book so that you guys remember the loss that we should feel when this happened. By no means is David happy that Saul is dead. Especially he's not happy that Jonathan has died as well. So that's definitely the turning point in the story, is Saul is no longer the threat that he was. Okay, questions, comments? All right, all with me? Everybody awake? All right. Okay, chapter 2. After this, David inquired of the Lord. So how would he do that? You can go to a priest. He might have insight for you. How else would... Let me see how to phrase this. It's kind of not fair because I'm asking you to remember things that you haven't heard before from me, but they're fresh on my brain. So how do you think David would inquire of the Lord? One is go to a high priest. It's a possibility. How else? Prayer. Okay. Rare to have that before the New Testament, by the way. Okay, what's the special, apron that a high priest would wear? The ephod, right? Fancy apron, right? Very decorative, obviously, stones in there. And you have these two special ones, one's white, one's black, called the Urim and the Thummim. And we don't know how they worked literally at all, but somehow they would use these two stones to determine what the will of God was in certain occasions. And David actually did that on whether or not he should go attack the, if he should flee from Saul the second time. And the answer was, yeah, get out of there. So he used these two stones that were in the ephod that the last remaining priest, you know, borrowed before they were all murdered by Saul earlier. How else, just theoretically? High priest, Urim and Thummim, prayer, cast lots. Yeah, I don't know what that really means, though. Like, so one theory on casting lots or using the Urim and Thummim was, it's kind of like dice in a way, right? If you roll dice, you get a certain number, a certain outcome. And so if you somehow pick one black or one white. It's either yes or no, right? It's kind of the idea there. So, what's that? Magic 8-Ball, absolutely, yeah. You know, that's it. It's one big one that you guys are missing. That's the one, yeah. A bubbling up person. Like the Hebrew for prophet means someone who bubbles up. The inference there is kind of like they are so filled with the message from the Lord, they can't help but let it flow out is the idea. And so a prophet was a pretty big deal, and he had a couple of those around him. So he could have just asked a prophet, hey, what's God say about this? And then you get the answer. I think the most recent one to this previously is he used the Urim and Thummim to determine what God's will was. So whatever the case, it's just kind of food for thought. Shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah? And the Lord said to him, go up. He said, to which shall I go up? He said, to Hebron. Okay. Why do you think he's asking these questions? In the context here. Okay, so where is he right now, theoretically? Ziklag, he just came back, and that's in the Philistine camp. And so he's kind of asking here, God, can I go home, right? He's been away for a while. Like, he's been living there, raiding people, helping the Philistines for a little bit to kind of preserve his own life. He's asking, can I go back now? And God's like, yeah. He goes, I can go to Judah, like right where near where Jerusalem is. It's like, yeah, where can I go? Hebron. Okay. That's kind of like the first step to get back home, if you will. David went up there, his two wives also, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal and Carmel. Everyone or Carmel? Anyone know about Abigail, that story? Yeah, it's one of my favorites. I think I spent a whole week on that just because it's one of those stories that when you figure out what's really going on behind the actual text and when you actually imagine yourself in that situation, Abigail was the best. She saved her husband, who's an idiot, and literally, and then all the people of her town because she was wise enough to go and do the right thing. Yeah, so the Cliff Notes version is David is like he's still kind of wandering around away from Saul, trying to escape him. He found these shepherds that belong to their master Nabal, which means foolish or idiot, depending on what translation you have. And he took care of them, protected them. They were vulnerable to raids and so on. He protected them and the sheep, and he brought them back to Nabal and said, hey, I got your guys here. We took care of them. You know, they're okay, but we need some help. We need some water and some food. And he's like, I don't know who you are. Get out of here. And so David's like, okay. So he got his sword on. He's like, I'm going to go kill you all then. That's how we're going to solve this problem. We have a need. I took care of your people. Try and get some good faith here, and you just slap me in the face, well, you're all dead by tomorrow. So they just start to go up there to just murder them all. And then Abigail here is like, my husband did what? And she's like, all right. So she sent all the supplies that she could and bowed down before David and said, listen, my husband's an idiot, paraphrasing. Please, thank you for your help. Here's all the stuff you need, and there's more. And so the Lord killed Nabal in a weird way. And then Abigail was then widowed, and David's like, hey, you want to get married or what? And so that's how that was, right? So a very cool story because rarely do you, well, not rarely, but it's not often that you see women portrayed in Scripture in such a positive light and in such a courageous way that David's like, hey, the Lord sent you to stop me from killing all of you. Thank you. Like, that's a huge deal. So anyway, that's his second wife. David brought up his men who were with him, everyone with his household, and they lived in the towns of Hebron. So David's kind of making his way back home. He's got his guys that were vagabonds, and they were vagrants, and they were just folks that were on the run. And he had his ragtag crew of 600 men that fought with him, and now they're moving back to Hebron. The men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. Let's pause here. When we say Judah in this particular area of Scripture, what do we mean? Because later you're going to have Israel and then Judah, the north and the south. So what do we mean when we say Judah here? Right. So if you look at, if you have a Bible that has maps in it, like you might have one that says like after Joshua, when they did the conquest, here's where everyone kind of had their spot. We have the United States of America. We have different states, right? We have different boundaries of where certain states start and end. Same kind of deal here. So you have Jerusalem, and one little area there is just for Judah. So it's not talking about Israel and Judah yet. That's later, but Judah was the biggest one. I'm pretty sure. Right, so it's kind of a big deal. Yeah, it's huge. The lion of the tribe of Judah, right? Talking about the actual person named Judah, who is the son of Jacob, right, or Israel. He got the big one, where Jerusalem was, which is going to be a big deal coming up here in a little bit. We'll get there, but do you remember how they conquered Jerusalem? David was like, there's some pretty good wells up there. I'd love to have some of that water. And two of his guys were just like, all right. And they went and just got the land for him. So kind of a cool story. But anyway, so Judah is signing off on Saul being dead and David being the next king. That's the biggest one. Very impressive. That's good. When they told David, it was the men of Jabesh Gilead who buried Saul. David sent messengers to the men of Jabesh Gilead and said to them, may you be blessed by the Lord because you showed this loyalty to Saul your Lord and buried him. So the guys that went over and they got the body of Saul and did a proper burial, that's what we're talking about here, is they're being blessed by the future king. Now may the Lord show steadfast love and faithfulness to you, and I will do good to you because you've done this thing. Now therefore let your hands be strong and be valiant, for Saul your Lord is dead, and the house of Judah has anointed me king over them. Okay, so that's kind of the introduction here. Things don't go as smooth as they could, let's say that. There are other people who are like, David who? Verse 8. All right. This is a very loaded question. Do you have a favorite villain in Scripture? Like, a villain's a very hard word to use because these are just people. So we only know about a very small fragment of their actions and their deeds. But there are certain people who are characterized as being just villains, evil. Do you have one? Pharaoh? Oh, that's a good one. Right? Hard head, hard heart. Anybody else? Pilate? Really? Okay. He's tricky for me. Just theoretically, but that's a good one. Anybody else? Saul is one. Very common one, right? He's flawed. He's the most human we've got in Scripture, I think, because he says good things. I repent. I'm sorry. All right? But his actions are never true to what he actually says. He repented before Samuel like four times, and he's like never changed his actions. So that's not really repentance, right? My favorite, I think, is Joab. If you don't know who Joab is, we're going to get to know him pretty well in the future. He's just imagine being at a crossroads of doing what the Lord wants and what David tells you to do from the Lord's instruction, and then doing not that. He always chooses not that, and somehow he's still kind of with David. He's a despicable person. He is a traitor. He's a liar. He does exactly what God doesn't want him to do, and he's just such an archetype. And so he's the brother of Abner here in verse 8. So Abner, the son of Ner, which is, you know, in the Hebrew is hilarious because it literally means from Ner. So he's Ner, is his dad. Commander of Saul's army, took Ishbosheth, it's a hard word for me to say, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim. He made him king over Gilead, and the Asherites and Jezreel and Ephraim and Benjamin and all Israel. So, I mean, you kind of got this. This is kind of a classic deal, right? The king is dead. Who's the new king? Well, obviously his son, right? Obviously. So the commander of the army, Abner, is just like, all right, Saul's oldest kid, Ishbosheth, here we go. You're the new king. So Gilead is a city, or like a region, kind of. The Asherites from Asher. Jezreel is a city. Ephraim's a tribe, and Benjamin's a tribe. So this kind of southern area here, towards the coast almost. Ishbosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel, and he reigned for 2 years. But the house of Judah followed David. So now you kind of have the stage set here. You got two competing kings. One is Saul's son, who's still alive, and then you've got David. So the dichotomy here, the kind of play here, is you've got truly the Lord's anointed, and those that know that follow David. And then you've got the son of the king that died in battle and killed himself, right? So you kind of got this weird play of power. And the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. So you kind of got an idea that this is a not done with quickly. You've got some, you know, catching up to do when it comes to who's king where, is the idea. Abner, the son of Ner, and the servants of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, went out from Mahanaim to Gibeon. And Joab, there he is. Second time his name. Do you know about Joab? Anyone not know about Joab? I'm getting no responses at all from either of you for both questions. Anyone not know Joab that well? Okay. We've got one honest person up there in the balcony. All right. I remember the first time I learned about Joab. I was in preaching school. Like, that's how like hidden he is in this particular book. So I remember reading about him, like, this guy. Like, I just can't believe this guy is in the Bible. I just can't believe it. And we actually made, it's going to sound really, really lame, and it really is. We were trying to memorize a bunch of information from the book of 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, and then the Chronicles. And we had tests on all these different individuals, and we just thought Joab was just so cool for being so, like, evil. We wrote a song about him, and the chorus was, "You just got Joabbed." So, I mean, I know it's lame. I'm not proud of it, but it's still funny to me. Because we had a guy play the guitar. We wrote this song, "You Just Got Joabbed," which means stabbed in the back, really. But, okay. I sure do. I'm not going to sing them. Sure do. Good memory. So Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and the servants of David went out and met them at the pool of Gibeon. Here is your first introduction to how Joab rolls. Okay, so you got Abner right there. Then you've got Joab. So you've got these two competing, like, commanders of the army of Ishbosheth, the king over some areas, and then for David. So Joab's rolling with David pretty early. So he's probably one of the people that kind of was kicked out of other cities and met up with David in the wilderness and became one of his, like, you know, his helpers in war. And they met them at the pool of Gibeon, and they sat down, the one on the one side of the pool, and the other on the other side of the pool. And Abner said to Joab, "Let the young men arise and compete before us." So we're talking about probably wrestling here, right? Joab said, "Let them arise." Then they arose, and they passed over by number, 12 for Benjamin and Ishbosheth the son of Saul, and 12 of the servants of David. And each caught his opponent by the head and thrust his sword in his opponent's side, and so they fell down together. All right, let's just back up a little bit. You got these two competing kind of commanders of the army that are hanging out by the pool of Gibeon. They're like, let's see what they got. So they fought, and they all killed each other. Therefore, that place is called Helkath Hazarim, which means field of sword edges, apparently, which is in Gibeon. And the battle was very fierce that day. So it went from a small, like, combat deal going on to now we're in a battle. Abner and the men of Israel were beaten before the servants of David. And the three sons of Zeruiah were there, Joab, Abishai, and Azahel. Now Azahel was as swift of foot as a wild gazelle. Fast dude, right? And Azahel pursued Abner. So, just so you know, David's not really aware of this, what's going on. We'll learn it later, but Joab's kind of just doing this. He's like, so who's your enemy now? Okay, Ishbosheth? All right, I know Abner. Let's go talk to him by the pool, and then they end up trying to kill him all. So that's Joab for you. Azahel pursued Abner, and as he went, he turned neither to the right hand nor to the left from following Abner. So he's chasing him down. And Abner looked behind him and said, is it you, Azahel? He said, it is I. So this is probably not how it went down, like literally, but the way the story goes is just wild to me. I just see like the Roadrunner, right, and Wile E. Coyote, and they're just booking it down this road. Like, is that you? Yeah, it's me. All right. You still trying to kill me? Yep. All right. Let's go. Abner said, turn aside to your right hand or to your left and seize one of the young men and take his spoil. But Azahel would not turn aside from following him. So here's Abner trying to throw his guys under the bus, saying, just kill one of these guys and take their stuff. Like, no, not for you. Abner said to Azahel, turn aside from following me. Why should I strike you to the ground? Yeah. How then could I lift up my face to your brother Joab? You don't, you know. You'll learn. But he refused to turn aside. Therefore, Abner struck him in the stomach with the butt of his spear, so the spear came out at his back. He put the blunt end of his spear through the dude that was chasing him down. So, like, the 12-year-old boy in me is like, what? Action movie time? Like, this is wild. And he fell there and died where he was. And all who came to the place where Azahel had fallen and died, they stood still. But Joab and Abishai pursued Abner. And as the sun was going down, they came to the hill of Emma, which lies before Gia on the way to the wilderness of Gibeon, as we all know. And the people of Benjamin gathered themselves together behind Abner and became one group and took their stand on the top of a hill. So here they are, ready. Abner called to Joab, shall the sword devour forever? Do you not know that the end will be bitter? How long will it be before you tell your people to turn from the pursuit of their brothers? Joab said, as God lives, which his faith will be called into question later. If you had not spoken, surely the men would not have given up the pursuit of their brothers until the morning. So Joab blew the trumpet, and all the men stopped and pursued Israel no more, nor they fight anymore. And Abner and his men went all that night through the Arabah. There they crossed the Jordan, marched the whole morning, and they came to Mahanaim. Joab returned from the pursuit of Abner, and when he had gathered all his people together, there were missing from David's servants 19 men besides Azahel. But the servants of David had struck down of Benjamin 360 of Abner's men. So not bad odds, combat-wise. And they took up Azahel and buried him in the tomb of his father, which was at Bethlehem. And Joab and his men marched all night, and the day broke upon them at Hebron. Okay, that's your small introduction to Joab. You've got him losing his brother to Abner, which is going to be very important a little bit later. Joab's not the kind of guy to just kind of forgive things and let it go. If you kill his brother, you can kind of see the writing on the wall, right? This is not going to go down well. Questions, comments? Okay, next week, Lord willing, we'll pick it up here and talk about how Abner wants to switch sides, and that may not go well for him. So we'll talk about that next week. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your attention. We'll be dismissed now for about 20 minutes before worship begins. Thanks.